Reb Chaim Volozhin, in addition to being a master teacher in Torah, also very much was interested in promoting the Kovod HaTorah, the respect and the dignity that Torah demands people who are Talmidei Chachamim and Marpitzei Torah, people who teach Torah. And therefore, Reb Chaim would try as much as possible, as how we say, to be Meroimim, the Keren HaTorah, that the Kovod HaTorah should be something that people should appreciate. That when you see a Talmid Chacham, you see someone who is a learned person, especially if it was Rabbonim, Rosh Yeshivas, it should be very much respected. And it is an interesting thing that it was because of that reason that Reb Chaim was so interested that the Kovod HaTorah allotted to Rabbonim and to teachers and Rosh Yeshivas be maintained, that in his time, you know, the Sefer Chayodom, which was the first of its kind at that time, going back, you know, that many years ago, a Sefer that compiled in short form, very bekitzer, all the various halachas. What the Sefer Chayodom accomplished was that a person would not have to spend that much time going through the lengthy, you know, halachas, learning in the Shulchan Aruch, but would have a command in learning the halachas in a much quicker way, more concise way, having a command in halacha in an easier way through the Sefer Chayodom. Of course, subsequently, you know, many, many forms of halacha that basically compiled all the various halachas, all the various teachings, became quite common. But the Chayodom was the first, sort of like the initiator in writing a Sefer in halacha that would be accessible to everyone. And of course, later on we have the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and so on, which did a similar job. Didn't agree with all the psukim of the Chayodom, had different opinions in halacha. But again, a Sefer that basically went through and brought together all the various dinim, all the various halachas. People should know appropriately what halacha demands in every area. But when the Sefer Chayodom, as we say, at that time, it was a new thing, a new innovation, was ready to be published. And as always, when a new Sefer is published, they try to go and receive haskomis, approbations, you know, from the Gedoy Lahador at the time. And the Chayodom also approached, interesting, Reb Chaim Volozhin to give haskom on the Sefer. And Reb Chaim Volozhin did not want to give haskom. Why? Not because the Sefer was not a good Sefer. As a matter of fact, it was a very good Sefer, Chayodom. Reb Chaim Volozhin was concerned that if the Sefer Chayodom appears on the scene, and every private house, every private home has a Sefer Halacha, so then simple Balabatim would say, why do we need Rabbanim for? I can pass him from the Chayodom. And therefore, he was concerned that the Kovod HaTorah of the leaders and the Manhigim and Rabbanim would be sort of reduced, it would be diminished, would not be so respected. Then obviously, today, you know, Svarim, Baruch Hashem are flourishing, you know, in all types of different languages, and you can have it. But at that time, it was a new thing, a new idea. And Reb Chaim had that particular concern that Balbatim should realize that they have to ask a shaila, not to rely on themselves. Everyone will become a person, everyone will pass an aloha, they'll open up the Sefer Chayodom, and they'll see all the alohas right there, black and white. So Reb Chaim had that concern that this might impinge, right, on the real Kovod HaTorah, and people would not have the same attitude towards Rabbanim. And so too, Reb Chaim really pointed out and says that Jewish leaders, he says, really should be very strong and forthright and not be afraid to voice the opinion, the true opinion, what they believe to be true, and not to be swayed by public opinion. And he pointed out that many times, he used to say sort of like a sort of description, he would say that many times as leadership, people in leadership, don't have the courage to really say what's supposed to be said. But the simple reason is, he says, they don't always even realize how much power they really have. In other words, they're worried that if they say something that's not popular, then they're going to lose their position. And he said that they don't really realize how powerful they are, and they should be able to say what they have to say. And would give a moshul, would give a very interesting, would say, in his time you had the Russian policemen. The Russian policemen, those days, policemen, not like today, that everything, you know, is so strict. In terms of policemen, you have it right away. If somebody do something wrong, of course, you have police abuse, and right away, of course, you have the government getting involved. It could be state, and depends whatever the situation is. city, local, whatever. In those days, a policeman had a lot of power. And Reb Chaim used to say that the Russian policeman does not know in the area, which is under his jurisdiction, he's almost like a king in that area. He had tremendous power. He'll arrest people, shoot people. I mean, it was up to him to decide what should be done. But he says he doesn't realize how much power he has. That's why he allows himself to be bribed for merely $5, he says. If he didn't know how much power he had, then he said the charge would be much higher. But he doesn't realize that he has so much influence, that much power, so he allows himself to be bribed just a few dollars. So the same thing he says, many rabbonim, he says, and many people in leadership don't realize really how much power they have. And those days, as a matter of fact, the Rav had a lot of power, because, for example, even regarding, if he wanted to preserve not the affluence, but the cheshivas of a town, each town had a shechet. Had a shechet, somebody who shechted, they had kosher meat. And the people, for example, if they felt, let's say, that the meat would be too expensive, so many of them would have an idea maybe to import meat from a different place. The Rav of this town had the ability to get up in the morning, stand at the pulpit, right, to be, make an announcement that any meat that's brought in from the outside is treif. For all intents and purposes, it would not be really treif. But under his jurisdiction, not be allowed to be eaten. In other words, it was called shchut echutz. And so they really had the power. Matter of fact, it was not that very long ago, there was a situation, in Antwerp, in Belgium, a Jewish community, tremendously a thriving Jewish community over there. And whatever the reasons, whatever the causes were, the price of chickens, kosher chickens, went up quite a bit. And there was especially young people, young sitting and learning in Kailam, and we found it difficult to afford it. And in England, which is not that far away, London, England, you know, it was cheaper. So the situation where they had vans, loaded a number of vans and stuff like that, and then brought it over the water, and imported chickens. And in terms of that, Rav Kreisler, who was the Rav of Antwerp, he got up a particular Shabbos, a particular day, and he said, listen, he says, any meat which is brought in, he says, from outside of Antwerp, he says, it's osir. Also Bachila. And I heard from a Yid, his name is Leibel Perlman, he's alive and well, he's a Boki Bishas, happens to be, he's Porsche Babus in Antwerp. And he told me, just to show you how serious, he says, the Gzeir of a Rav was, and when he said like this, he said, starting from Mishchaydish, he says, starting, that's where he gave it time, he said, starting from Mishchaydish, he says, any meat brought in from outside is treif. So the person came and asked the Rav Ishaila, which day, first day Mishchaydish or second day Mishchaydish? So to show you exactly how serious they took the Gzeir of Rav Kreisler. So again, this is all of the ideas of how involved the Reb Chaim Volozhin was to promote the greatness of Torah, to promote the chashivas of Torah. Reb Chaim, in addition, of course, to his greatness in Torah and his scholarship, was a tremendous tzaddik. It goes without saying, the whole Sefer Nefesh HaChaim deals with dedication in Avodas Hashem in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He writes in his Nefesh HaChaim, which I hope one day we'll get there, but we're still learning Shar Aleph. Not that we're concluding. This is the last parak. This week is actually parak Chof Beis, which is the final parak in Shar Aleph, the 22nd parak. This is the 24th shir, by the way, but it's only the 22nd parak. So, and Bez Hashem, next shir, which will be after Shavuos, I think will be the last for the season. So we're going to do part of parak Chof Beis today, and Meshem leave over the second half of Perek HaBeis, Meshem for the next year. But he writes in Shar Dalet, so this is Shar Aleph. Shar Aleph, you know, 22 Prakim. But he says in Shar Dalet, he writes, that before a person really sits down to learn, being that you're learning Hashem's Torah, he says you have to do tshuva. A person cannot go, you know, in coming from a background where he really does not feel the Kedushas of Torah, the holiness of Torah, and to be a servant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he writes the following, a person really should prepare himself. You have to be a kli, you have to be a vessel. A little bit, take some time to think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Taharas Halev, he says, with the purity of heart, fear is Hashem. Well, the Tahir, he says, and to purify himself from his Averis, the Hurei Tshuva, because the idea is you want to connect our souls, our neshama should connect with the Torah. By learning Torah, it's a medium. It's not just a question of knowing Torah. It's not just a question of scholarship in Torah. It's not just a question of intelligence in Torah. Learning Torah should serve as a medium to come closer to Hashem. But how can you come closer to Hashem really if you don't really prepare yourself and try to purify yourself, your character, in every aspect, to try, before you really sit down to learn Torah? And he says, at least make a commitment, at least resolve, that you should be ready to try to accept what the Torah wants from you, and Torah should be ksav, and Torah should be and so on and so forth. And the truth is, again, as we've shown many times, what Reb Chaim writes very much, you find also, you know, in the other school of thought, which is in the world of Hasidus, which Reb Chaim, of course, was not part of that world at that time. And in fact, the Goyim was very much against Hasidus, you know, when the movement started. And but yet, many of the teachings that you find, which Reb Chaim writes, is clearly filled, which is very fundamental in the teachings of Hasidus. And so forth, therefore, the Chozim Lublin, before he himself would begin to learn, he would open up a Gemara, but basically he would say, and by the way, this is brought down, they say, from Moriv Shemesh, in Parshas Devorim, that the Chozim Lublin, before he would sit down to learn, he would say, Rabbi Nishleim, is it possible that I'm going to be learning Torah, and maybe it would apply to me the Pasuk in Tehillim, Ularosha Omer Lekim Malach Ulasap Rechikah, because Bava says to an evil person that you're learning my Torah, he says, what does my Torah have to do? What connection do you have with my Torah? In other words, the person has to make himself really worthy, at least try, at least this should be a goal that a person should try to know and to realize that the purpose of learning is to change a person coming closer to Hashem. And so this was really a fundamental thing, as we say in Teres HaChassidus, and Chaim writes at the Teresh and Efshe Chaim Yishad Aleph, that before a person sits to learn, he should purify himself. He should be Mahar B'Tshuva and think about ways and means coming closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu as well. There's one more thing, and that is that the learning Amsech Tesoite, the Tafyomi system, and coming at the end, actually, we're not yet there, but in Daf Memtes, the Mishnah in Soite, it talks about all of the things, all of the simonim that we can recognize, all the signs that then the time of Mashiach is very near. And the Mishnah presents many, many phenomena which are going to take place prior to the coming of Mashiach, which many, many of them have long already been around. And at the end, the Mishnah says, well, situations are going to be in such a spiritual decline overall in the world that the Mishnah says, "Ein lanu lehishoyin," we have no one to rely on there, Ela Avinu Shebishamayim. Before Mashiach comes, we will have no one to rely on, only on Avinu Shebishamayim, only on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Reb Chaim says that line is not a separate line. That line is also part of the sign when Mashiach comes. In other words, he says this is a negative. It means like this. People should not say Hashem is going to do it if I don't have to do anything. The truth is, people have the power, and every person in his own way is able to do something in order to add, to increase the Kavod Shemayim, to make a Kiddush Hashem of the world, and to be able to stand up and voice his opinion for what is really truly right. But when the time of Mashiach will come, people will have lost their courage. They'll say, we have no one to rely on, only on Hashem. So now this is not a comforting statement, it's just the opposite. And the Mishnah says, before Mashiach comes, the only one we'll be able to rely on is Alavinu Shebishamayim. That's part of the signs of before Mashiach. When people will say, I don't have to do anything, what can I do? You throw your hands up in despair, and you say, it's all up to Hashem. No, Hashem helps you, but you have to do the first and try as much to the maximum of your ability. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, will be mashlam that you have atzlocha. So, Rabbi Yitzhak, we go here to Perek Chavdalet, here in the Nefesh HaChayim. basically Reb Chaim here in this last chapter, Reb Chaim basically starts out with a word of warning. And the word of warning is very, very important because we are living in times where people somehow believe, you know, that religion changes according to the time. And this is very important. Reb Chaim wrote this, as you see, going back a few hundred years ago. Reb Chaim is writing this. This is way before this idea became popular. You know, but all the various movements that subsequently have come into being, where people think that we adjust the Torah according to the times. It's not that way. Torah is eternal. Torah is given by Hashem. And therefore, if it's Hashem, we are not in control to tamper with what is not ours. It's ours as a gift from Hashem in order to use it according to the instructions in the way that it was given to us. And therefore, B'chaim goes on to point out in this Perek Chavdeis, in other words, you have to realize, once we begin to tamper with the Torah, trying to make changes, then actually it's not Hashem's Torah, it's your own Torah. Who wants to worship another human being? In other words, a couple of human beings decide, you know what, we're going to start changing this, we're going to start changing that. So ultimately, so whose Torah is it? It becomes a man's Torah. You want to worship the Torah of man? That's not Torah. Torah is the teaching of what Hashem taught us. And therefore, based upon the tradition, based upon the Mesorah, this is what we follow. Now, the Chachomim, the sages of the generations, were given certain powers. It's true. And we'll see about that as we go in here. But the basic, fundamental foundation that Reb Chaim here tells us, that we're reading now Perek Chavos, that from the time, from the moment that Moshe Rabbeinu brought the Torah down to earth, of course it's no longer in heaven, and a person therefore will say to himself, okay, Moshe Rabbeinu brought the Torah down here. Well, if he brought it down here, so now it's in our hands, so maybe we can start tampering with it, maybe we can start changing it, or even better still, many times we start giving reasons, our own reasons, what we believe to be reasons, in various mitzvahs of Torah. And once we start believing in our own reasons, we thereby use our reason as guidelines where the mitzvah applies or does not apply. Because we decided this is the reason. Well, if the reason applies, fine. But if the reason does not apply. Let's give you a simple example. You have in the modern world where people would say that maybe the reason for eating kosher meat, maybe because it's healthier, it's cleaner, it's more hygiene. By the way, it may be a convenient byproduct, a convenient benefit, but that's not the reason. That's not the reason. And the truth is, no one knows the real reason. The reasons that are given is to help us come closer, and because when we have some understanding, it gives us more motivation to be able to do the mitzvahs. But ultimately, the mitzvah is Hashem's mitzvah, and no one can really fathom the ultimate depth of the mitzvah. There's superficial reasons. But certainly we cannot compare our wisdom to the wisdom of Hashem, and the Torah is Hashem's wisdom. And therefore, the real depth of every mitzvah, if you go deep, deep down, the reasons that Hashem himself had behind the mitzvah is something which was not revealed to us, and our own minds cannot figure it out. That's what Reb Chaim basically is saying. And therefore, no one, no matter how great his understanding is, a person should not rely on his understanding. Being he says, I have a tremendous perception. So a man says to him, well, you know, my perception is so great. I know what the reason of this particular mitzvah is, and therefore I can manipulate it. I'm in control of that mitzvah based upon my understanding. A person will say, I'm able to see the deep secrets and the reason behind the mitzvahs. How they affect the upper worlds. In other words, he has such a deep perception that he even can figure out a way how my mitzvah has a tremendous effect in the upper worlds. A person will try to permit himself and says, according to the understanding of the root of my neshama, according to the understanding of the root of my neshama, he'll say to himself, I'm allowed to violate a certain mitzvah. Based upon my understanding about the parameters of this mitzvah, maybe it allows me, in certain instances, that I have a right to violate the mitzvah. Or somebody else, according to his root of his neshama, he may say, according to the root of my neshama, this mitzvah does not apply in a certain time or in a certain instance or under certain circumstances. It will not apply based upon my genetic spiritual composition. Chaim say you can never say that. He'll say that laver chaz v'sholom alei is a mitzvah. That he says to be over chaz v'sholom on a mitzvah, or maybe even to neglect the detail, he says, of any mitzvah. To diminish. Okay, you say, you know, maybe it's enough to do the mitzvah three quarters of the way. I don't have to do all the details that halacha prescribes. I understand that maybe this particular detail is not that important, he may come to say. Reb Chaim says, you have no right even to neglect even a detail, even that was instituted by the rabbinic ordinances, he says. Or even to attempt to change the time. He'll tell you, okay, I'm going to do the mitzvah, but you know what? I want to change the time of the mitzvah. Imagine someone saying, I want to keep or celebrate Pesach, you know, in the summertime. You can change the mitzvah. I'll make a Seder. I'll make it in the summertime. Or maybe he says, maybe we'll blow Shaver, you know, Pesach time. I'm doing the exact same thing, I just changed the time. This Chaim says, of course, be a ridiculous thing. Because the whole inyan of the mitzvah, of course, has to be done, just like the details of the act itself, but also the time and the place. Therefore, he says, Saima Torah. And therefore, it's important to note, to prevent, in other words, to prevent such thoughts from occurring, that a person might think that based upon his great perception that he believes he has, based upon his overwhelming understanding that he believes he has, that he's now in control, right, of making his own guidelines regarding a mitzvah. Reb Chaim says, therefore, the Torah itself, the Torah ends with the words, just at the end of the Chumash, at the end, way at the end of the Chumash, Parashas Zoysa Brachot, says, Leikom Novi K'moshe. The Pasuk says that no other prophet like Moshe has arisen, right, be Yisrael. No other prophet, no one with a greater prophet as Moshe Rabbeinu, to tell us that after Moshe, no one, no prophet, and no chacham may add anything new. Leikom Novi K'moshe. These are the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs that Moshe Rabbeinu brought and gave us, these and only these are the mitzvahs. Which means to say, the Gemara Shabbos tells us, that these are the mitzvahs, which means that from now on, no Novi, no prophet is authorized to make innovations. But we'll see, he's going to modify that soon. This is just on a general scale. We'll see there are certain instances that temporarily, a Novi can say that he had particular inspiration, if he's the true Novi, but he's a true prophet, he's able to make minor changes for particular reasons for the benefit of the bigger picture as we spoke about. But that's only a novi, a prophet, but only under certain circumstances. But to change a mitzvah to say it doesn't apply today, or a situation like that, there's no such thing. No one has the ability. No one has this koyach to do this. And the Chumash itself reiterates this and emphasizes this. Chumash, Somcha Torah. In the same way we find that the Torah also put together, it's in Parsha Shoftim. In the Devarim Yud Gimel, the Torah puts together and connects. It says like this. It says, this, Kol Adover Ashin Anoichi Mitzave, everything that I am commanding you to do today. And then it says, Lo Yisoysev Olav, do not add and do not detract. Don't add and don't detract. L'sigra Mimenu. And this pasuk, by the way, is mentioned right after Ki Shigam Ki Yokum B'Kirbuch HaNovi. It's talking about when a Novi will arise among you. So we're talking about a person who is great. A Novi is very great. A prophet is someone with divine inspiration. And yet, the Hemshech, the Torah continues, after stating a Novi arises, and even a Novi, that's when the Torah precisely says, L'soysiv L'sigra, which means to say that even a Novi does not have the koich. Even a Novi, even a prophet does not have the koich. Rotzaloyimah, the posik means to say, L'hoysiv L'groyachat V'sholem. L'hoysishma says the posik. That's the lotion, that's the wording of the posik. One thing only, to follow in the ways and the words of Hashem. So, now Reb Chaim goes on, as a matter of fact, to prove this point. Reb Chaim wants to prove this point that no matter how great a person you are, you can be the greatest scholar in the world. You can have the tremendous perception, you have tremendous depth, you have tremendous insight, and according to your understanding, let's say you want to make a cheshbon, that maybe I should violate a certain mitzvah. Why? I want to violate a certain mitzvah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should come out ahead for certain reasons. You have no right to do it. You haven't got the right to do it, as he points out here as follows. Baharei, to prove this point is Chizkiyoh HaMelech. We find, let me just tell you a little bit of background. It's something we discussed already once in some of the past shiurim. Chizkiyoh was a melech in Yehuda. And of course, Yeshayah was a Novi. So here you have Yeshayah as a Novi, Chizkiyoh is a melech. And it turned out that Chizkiyoh and Yeshayah did not meet. They did not meet. Chizkiyoh would say, listen, I'm a king. If I'm a king, I'm on a higher level than a Novi, than a prophet. Therefore, it's more appropriate that the Novi should come to see me. Yeshayah should come to see me. Yeshayah, on the other hand, said, no. You're a king. As much as you're king, king is a great thing. However, you're just a king. You're a human being, a flesh and blood. A Novi is someone who is divine inspiration. So I'm higher spiritually connected than you as a king. So therefore, I am Novi. Therefore, I am more chashivus. I have more importance. You come see me. So we are told, of course, as is mentioned in the Tanakh, what the Kodesh Baruch Hu do, Chizkiyoh fell ill, took ill, became sick. So now Yeshayah Novi comes to visit him. Well, visiting the sick, you know, you visit. You don't make these kind of calculations. I'm greater, he's not. Somebody's sick, you go to visit him. So Yeshayah Novi comes to visit Chizkiyoh, and he says to him, being that he's a Novi, he said to him what his future is going to be. the one thing, the most important thing that any person who's seriously ill, what he'd like to know, is he going to come out of it or not? That's the most important thing that he would like to know. But you don't always know. Sometimes symptoms change. But now we're talking about a Novi. Yeshaya is a Novi. So Chesky wants to hear from Yeshaya, you know, what is his fate going to be regarding his illness? And Yeshaya tells him the bad news. He says to him, Tavato Labeitcho. You might as well write your will. Tavato Labeitcho. He says, tell your people, your family, you're going to die and you're not going to live. It's a double ocean. It's a redundancy. You're going to die and you're not going to live. And Chizki right away, he's overwhelmed, he's bewildered. And he says, my high, he says, what did I do? What did I do? Says to him, interestingly enough, he didn't get married. The mitzvah to get married and bring children to the world. The first mitzvah in the Torah. First mitzvah in the Torah, to get married in order to bring children to the world. Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda, at that time, had not married, but did not have children. So he says to him, but I have a good reason for that. Chizkiyahu was a king, was not a simple king. He also had Ruach HaKodesh. And he saw, I saw Ruach HaKodesh, the Natskin Meni, the Nindalei Malah. I'm going to have a son who's going to be a wicked, evil person. And in fact, later on, when he did have a child, he had Menashe. Menashe was a Rosha. So Chizkiyahu said, Is that a good idea? I should get married and bring such a person to the world? I was able to foresee the future. If I get married, I'm going to bring this kind of a person to the world. That's why I tried to prevent it from happening. That's why I didn't get married. So there's good reason for me not getting married. Why should I be punished? And Yeshaya says to him, Tabi kafshid rachman olam alach. It's not your business in the secrets of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have a mitzvah to do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides later on that from that mitzvah something might come out of it that's not maybe such a great benefit to the world. That's the Kodesh Baruch Hu's problems. We have to do what's right at the time. The time is you have to get married. In other words, you don't, based upon your own calculations, decide what's right and what to do. A mitzvah is supposed to be done because the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave you the mitzvah. You're not supposed to delve into the future and determine thereby whether to do the mitzvah or not. So let's take a look inside the comment of Reb Chaim Volozhin over here, Nefesh HaChaim, about that. Reb Chaim says, "By Chizkiyahu HaMelech, Shiro Bruch HaKodesh, Yisro Bruch HaKodesh, Denapki Menei Benin Delei Malach." He saw Bruch HaKodesh that he's going to have children. He's going to have children that are not going to be appropriate. He saw he's going to have children that are not going to be a benefit to the world. Therefore, he did not get married. His kavana, his intent was clearly l'shem shemayim. There's no question. His kavana's intent was very pure. One would say, why is he going to be punished for that? His kavana, his machshavas, his plan was on the loftiest, on the highest, purest level. His kavana was l'shem shemayim, so l'harav is rishu oilam. His kavana was clearly not to produce rishoyim into the world. And yet he was rebuked by Yeshaya. Im kol zeh bo'el of Yeshaya b'dvar Hashem. And Yeshaya, by the way, Yeshaya is a prophet, so he's coming in the name of Hashem. He's not saying his own thing. Yeshaya is a novi. Now he's speaking in the name of Hashem. So he comes b'dvar Hashem v'omaloi. And he says to him, and this is found in Malachim Beis, ki meis ato v'loi sichye. Meis ato, you're going to die in this world. By the way, he says you're going to lose the next world also. Now, that's very hard to take. He's going to lose the next world also, and you'll soon see. Mishim loy sakto b'piri v'rivye. And he told him, because you are not Isaac in piri v'rivye, he says to him, because you did not get married. He said, you did not try to have children. Loy hoy loy. And what's most, he says, incredible, Reb Chaim says, Chesky was a tremendous tzaddik. He had tremendous contributions on the scene, right, of the Jewish people. Tremendous contributions that he made. All of his tzidkis did not help him because of this violation. But it's not because simple violation. There's something deeper. But let's see the very interesting interpretation of Reb Chaim about this. So far we see, we saw all of his mitzvahs. You know, countless righteous deeds. Countless righteous deeds of Chizkiyahu could not help bring him to the world to come. You know why? He says, "Bishvil shesova lehipoter mitzvah achat mitoyres Moshe," because he wanted to exempt himself from one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, even though he foresaw by Ruach HaKodesh they would have an evil son. As he says, "Shekein roa basogis ruach kochoi," even though he saw Ruach HaKodesh The Yitzchum and Eberin de Leimale. The Gamshoy Bishavotat. By the way, this was a violation passively. There's a violation we do actively. A person does an active violation. That's doing something active, which is much more serious. One would say this is half as serious, because the violation of not having children is by not doing. It's not a violation of doing. And yet, in spite of the fact that it was a passive violation of the mitzvah, a passive violation, and he had countless credits right to his side, numerously, many. And yet it did not help him. What Reb Chaim is saying, you know why? Now here's the point, very important point. It's not simply for violating a mitzvah. You don't lose the world to come. If a person violates a mitzvah, you get punished for that mitzvah. You get punished for that, but you still have the world to come for all the other mitzvahs. The violation here is because he in his mind made a judgment that the mitzvah doesn't apply to him. In other words, he was controlling Torah. Violating a mitzvah because somebody succumbs to temptation is something that could be forgiven. You succumb to temptation. The world is full of temptation. We are not perfect people. We slip, we hope to get up again, and we may slip again, and we pull ourselves up again, and that's the way of the world. And we have to always pray and be misfiled, because God should give us the opportunity to be able to maintain our higher spiritual level. The problem with Chizkiyahu was that he rationalized, that he understands the guideline that the mitzvah should not apply to him. That means that now he took his human mind to be able to uproot the mitzvah, that to him this mitzvah doesn't apply. Uprooting a mitzvah through human perception that the mitzvah doesn't apply to you, rationalizing lowly human intelligence, limited, compared to, of course, with Hashem's wisdom, that was the depth of the infringement on the indictment against Chizkiyahu. Not simply because you violate a mitzvah. No one's perfect. We may violate many, many mitzvahs in our lifetime. But hopefully, because now we don't believe in the mitzvah. We believe in the mitzvah, but we say, listen, we are being tempted. We are only so strong. We have weaknesses. Some person has a weakness in this area. Another person has a weakness in a different area. Okay? So, one mitzvah has nothing to do with something else. However, Chizkiyahu HaMelech rationalized. He rationalized that the mitzvah doesn't apply to him. So he started to control the mitzvah based upon human intelligence. That, says Reb Chaim, that was the problem. Ki tamei mitzvot atachlisom. Because to be able to fathom the mitzvahs from the root, where it comes from, we cannot go so deep. No way do we understand that. It was not revealed to us. It was not revealed to anyone. At this point, it was not revealed to anyone. And he says, Afle Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaSholem. You hear that? Even Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest teacher, Moshe Rabbeinu Rabban Shishrol, the greatest Navi, also was not revealed to him the depth, the core, and the root of what's the mitzvah about, what's the reason of the mitzvah. It was not revealed to him. One person knew it, says Reb Chaim. Rak l'odom arishin kodem achet. First man before he sinned, because then he was totally a spiritual being. There's nothing physical really about him. Even his body was spiritual. Everything was ruchnis. But then he was created directly by Hashem. Not like anybody else. After Adam Rishon, everybody's born from a father and a mother. Right? But Adam Rishon was created directly from Hashem. So he was on the highest spiritual level. He was able, and to him was revealed, the secrets of the mitzvahs. But since Adam Rishon, even Moshe Rabbeinu, was not revealed to him. As he goes on to point out, he says, the truth is, that, as he says, that man is not able to fathom the mysteries of the mitzvah. And he uses the moshel, the parable that the Gemara uses regarding the secrets of the Torah. The Gemara says in Brochus, it's Yayin HaMishumer Ba'anova Mishesis Mebereshis. The mysteries of the Torah are like the wine that has been preserved in its grapes from the 6 days of creation. Imagine when you have wine preserved in grapes. Wine is preserved in grapes, you can't see it. It's hidden. The mysteries of Torah, the mitzvahs are compared to wine that has been preserved in the grapes. That is the mystery. It's secret. It's hidden. It's concealed. And as the Marshal points out, that the wine that has been preserved in its grapes from the time of creation, he says, this has such a spiritual quality because it was created out of nothing. So says actually the Marshal. Says that. So the point is what Reb Chaim is trying to say here to us, that this is the way, the mitzvahs atoyah, the reason of the mitzvahs atoyah are hidden, they are concealed. We cannot fathom them. We can give our own superficial reasons to help us a little bit, to motivate us, right? And to make it sort of like more convenient for us to be able to go along. But that's not the reason that we do the mitzvahs. It's the mitzvah Hashem. It's Hashem's mitzvah. That is what it's all about. By the way, as the great Balamus used to say, saying the name of the altar from Kelm. Altar from Kelm used to say, listen, people eat food. People eat food. You have to live. You can't live without eating. Now, food, of course, it helps us if the food tastes good. And we hope and we try to eat food that tastes good. Not all food, by the way, that tastes good is good. It's good for you. But food that has a taste, right, is more enjoyable to eat. Now, when you eat food that has a good taste, the nourishment that the body derives is not from the taste of the food. The nourishment is derived from the actual food. The taste and the food have to be a byproduct, a side benefit. You know, the nourishment is not because of the taste. The vitamins that you get into your body is not dependent on how good it tastes. Or it's not measured by that. The same thing, the reasons of the mitzvah are just the taste of the mitzvah. But that's not the spiritual charge. What charges your neshama, what connects with your neshama, is the mitzvah itself. The reasons are the taste of the mitzvah. So the mitzvah tastes better. This is the reason. In the same way as food, the taste is a good benefit, it's a convenient benefit, but that's not what gives the nourishment to the body. It's not the taste of the food, it's the food itself. And what happens to a person who can't taste baklal, where his taste buds don't work? The food is going to nourish it. So it doesn't have the benefit of the taste, but it's the food itself. The reasons of the mitzvah, it's called tameya mitzvah, the taste of the mitzvah. The reason of the mitzvah, like, it's a good taste. It makes the mitzvah a little bit better tasting. But that doesn't determine the quality of the mitzvah. The better the reason, the less of the reason. Reasons are not important. Convenient. The mitzvah is the mitzvah of Hashem himself. And even the reason that we give, we cannot really fathom the depth of the mitzvah, the core of the mitzvah. It was not even revealed even to Moshe Rabbeinu, says the Nefesh HaChaim. One person alone, first man, Adam Rishon, he had that privilege. To him was revealed. And he goes also on to explain, he says, similarly, we find that at the time of Bris Olam, we find that at the time of creation, we also find that there was a tremendous light that HaKadosh Baruch Hu removed. And it's saved for the future when Mashiach comes, this light will emerge again for tzaddikim in the future world. But at the time of the 6 days of creation, that light was in the world, and it was such a bright light, he says, the light that basically that functioned during the first days of creation, the Gemara says in Chagiga that the light was such a bright light, it doesn't mean merely a physical light, or the Mishnah was able, through the manner of this light, he was able basically to see from one end of the universe to the other end of the universe. The light enabled, it was such a tremendous light. It was such a tremendous light that Adam Rishon was enabled by that light to be able to see from one end of the world to the other. What we're trying to say is, that the mysteries of the Torah are just as that tremendous, tremendous light that we don't even have today. That tremendous light which allowed Adam Rishon to see. He was able to see. He had that light. But now the mysteries of Torah are so hidden from us in the same way that that light, that original light, is no longer around. Because Baruch Hu removed it, and it's spared for the future time, when time will come. Says Reb Chaim, ki ha-Torah ha-Kdoisha, because the Torah ha-Kdoisha atula milamala roish. He wants to point out that in light of all this, he says, being that the Torah, he says, it comes from Hashem, it's beyond all human comprehension. The true depth of the Torah is beyond human comprehension. It's Hashem's Chochmah. It's not human Chochmah. It's Hashem's Chochmah. So he says that Torah HaKdoshah Atula, it emanates milamala roish, ma'al kol ha'asogos. It's beyond any human comprehension. So the eich efshar. So how is it possible? Sheyehei ha'dover mosul ha'asogos odom. So how do you think that Hashem says, okay, I'm giving you the Torah, and you decide, you know, what to pick and choose, which mitzvah? Beyond your comprehension. You can't even make an intelligent selection. Can you imagine? Imagine if you have a patient. And there's a question, you know, it's very serious surgery. Let's say brain surgery. And his question, should we do it, do we not do it? So let's assume that you have 5 surgeons, 6 surgeons, and they're arguing. Some say we do it, some say we can't do it, some say we shouldn't do it. So there's a common bystander over there who's listening. I think you should do it. What kind of opinion is that? to have an opinion, is it? You're not in the running. You're not in the counting. You're not qualified to give an opinion. Who are you to give an opinion that this mitzvah applies now or it doesn't apply? It's beyond human comprehension. You have no connection to the depth and to the intelligence and to the wisdom and to the core and the root of the mitzvahs. It's beyond your human comprehension, says Reb Chaim. L'shano is mehel choton. In order to be mishana, in order to make changes, he says, man presumes that he can make changes on the strength of his limited knowledge and insight, he says. To say that the manam, or maybe change the time frame, al pi reichet datav etzagos, based upon the strength of his knowledge. Ukemoshe Yeshivai, exactly like Yeshayah, that's what Yeshayah said to Chizkiah going back. He said to him, when Chizkiah started to rationalize why he didn't get married, what was again the answer that Yeshayah Novi said to him? Yeshayah Novi said to him, Vavikav shed rachmona lomaloch, what have you to do with Hashem's secrets? You have to do what you're commanded. Don't start rationalizing. It's not in your hands. It's not up to you, and you can't rationalize. My the mitkadas, what you are commanded, iboyloch lemevet, you have to do. Umay the nichekam kuchabrichu, when a kuchabrichu wants to do whatever he pleases, let him do afterwards. In other words, if you have a child, and if it's a kuchabrichu allows him to be a rosha, and that's the way of the world, so that's going to be the way of the world. Once you do the mitzvah, the consequence, let Hashem deal with that. You have to do the mitzvah. You have to do whatever you have to do. We stop now, Rabbi, it's over here. We go to the sheet. It's before Shavuot, it's before Kabbalah Satayrit. And in connection with what we just learned, I think the sheet would help us with a little bit of some insight. So we understand that, again, the Torah, of course, beyond human comprehension. It's Hashem's Torah, and we cannot tamper with it. We don't have the right to tamper with it. We don't have the right to tamper with it. And we cannot decide when the mitzvahs apply and when they don't apply. Another sheet maybe over there. I think we're missing one over here. I have it. Okay, I have it. Thank you. Okay. just to show you the idea. For example, Chizkiah at first made his own calculations by saying, I'm not getting married because something bad will come out. Now, what was bad? Bad enough. You can have a son, Menashe, who did a lot of terrible things, a lot of evil things in the world. And yet, Yeshayah said to him, those consequences are not your concern, but you're delving into the future. You have a mitzvah to do, and whatever the consequences in the world, so let the chips fall where they may. That leave up to Hashem the consequences of what happens later. And if Hashem wants it to be that way, it'll be that way. If he wouldn't want it to be that way, it will not be that way. But that's not your concern. You're not running the world. You have to do your mitzvah. You have to do what you have to do. So we find from the Sefer Bechar to Bechaim, who points out that actually it was even much worse than that. I mean, when Chizkiah was saying he didn't want to get married to have a son, Menashe was more than just looking at him simply as an evil person. Look what he caused. We learn from here a tremendous, tremendous point. Because the truth, by the way, Chizkiah did not make a mistake in his calculations. In other words, it turned out later whatever he said was true, but it didn't help him. It was true, because finally he had a child, he begot a child, Menashe, and that was a Menashe who was, in fact was a Rosha. But it's more than that, he says. Chizkiah, in fact, Chizkiah did not make a mistake. Ki yotam ben Menashe, she bishvil chato, because of the sins of Menashe, nechtam ha-gzadin lechor beis amigdosh. It's mentioned in Malachim that ultimately because of his sins, it led to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Which means that Chizkiah not wanting to get married, so in a certain sense, it would have been such a tremendous advantage not getting married, he possibly could have saved the Beit HaMikdash. And even such a tremendous gain of possibly, by not getting married, he would have saved the Beit HaMikdash from this being destroyed, even that did not justify rationalizing whether to do a mitzvah or not. That's an amazing and incredible. You see the underpinnings of this idea, how far-reaching this is. So even though ultimately he saw the kilkul, he saw the damage of the churban beis hamikdash, still at that time it was not enough of a reason. It was not enough of a reason to exempt him from doing a mitzvah. So very, as you say, in short form, what we see, to summarize, chayiv odom lekayim mitzvah Hashem, a person is obligated to fulfill the mitzvah, the lichesh bainis cloud. No personal calculations even if he's able to look into the future, that some damage will come out, even as greater damage like the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So this again just reiterates again to see how far reaching. One would say that Chesky, maybe from our standpoint, you know, the way we would be looking at it, we would say Chesky is a tzaddik. He didn't want to get married, right? He sacrificed having children for the sake of the world. The world should not to produce a son of Russia. And not only that, to save and to spare the Beis HaMikdash. Menashe was the cause. The Gemara, as it says in Melachim. And yet, even that would not be good enough reason. Even to spare and to save the Beis HaMikdash. Because why? You have a mitzvah to do whatever you have to do. Whatever consequences may ensue later, that's not your business. You're not running the world. You have to do a mitzvah for now. You're concerned with now. What are my obligations now at this time? Standing here now, what do I have to do? What does Hashem want me to do now? And that's what I have to do. Now, if we go to number three, this is from a sefer called Sichas Avodas Hashem. He's a young man, actually. He's called Rav Meiflish. He's a grandson of Rav Nosson Shtetl of Bnei Brak. The son of Rav Nosson Shtetl's son. He's a very choshev sefer, and he gives a lot of shmus in there, so a very popular person. And he writes as follows. The Yom Tov Shavuos is coming up. And we have to realize, Rabbi Yisrael, Yom Tov Shavuos is coming up. We know that the significance, we always think of Shavuos as being the time of Matan Torah. It's the Yom Tov that Torah was given to us. We celebrate Matan Torah. It's Kabbalah Torah. It's Matan Torah. We know what is Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the Yom Adin. It's the Day of Judgment. But we find out from the Shlach HaKodesh and from the Gedolei Chassidus, Shavuos is also a Yom Adin. What is the difference between the Yom Adin of Shavuos being a day of judgment to the Yom Adin of Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah, it's a Yom Adin on Gashmias, on materialistic things. How long you're going to live, how much panosa you're going to have, health, everything dealing with your material life. Shavuos is the Yom Adin on how much Torah. How much Torah, how much seichel in Torah, how much availability in terms, in areas of your spiritual growth. In other words, the Yom Tov Shavuos that's coming up should not just be let go lightly. But really it's a time to really connect, to do as much learning as possible, do as much davening as possible, because the Shavuos day of how you conduct yourself, the attitude that you have on the Shavuos day and the Yom Tov Shavuos can determine your spiritual growth through the entire year. A tremendous, tremendous thing, and let's take a look about this. Mi'ulavad migoydel segulas hazman. Besides the fact, as b'chol shana v'shana choyze v'nishne inyematn toira. In other words, we find out there's another thought. When Shavuos comes, the end of Shavuos comes, and we say it's the time of matn toira, it's not merely the calendar date of matn toira, but really the day of matn toira, actually, of a history. Now the historical date comes back. Can you imagine a Kodesh Baruch Hu goes and he plucks out, right, thousands of years ago, the day that we received the Torah? We can't do that. Let's say Hashem takes that day, that's that day, and he plucks it out of time, right, bottles it, and every year when Shavuot comes along, Hashem places that day onto that calendar date. Yisroel Magdoshim point out that when Shavuot comes, or the Yom Tovim come, it's not just a historical calendar date, but actually the time of the original event reoccurs in the present time, becomes, again, recycled over and over again. So actually, Matan Torah is taking place every year as it did the very first time. But that's only one aspect. Besides that, this Gilu Lono Ashlo HaKodesh, Mesech Teshuvos, Ashlo HaKodesh was Megalot revealed to us, Oy Tvorim Nifloim, tremendous thing, the Goydel Toikev Kedushas Ayem Azeh. The Shlach HaKodesh revealed to us tremendous things about the great Kedusha of this day of Shavuos. Mitzaratzmus. Kuhuyayim edin rabba. It's a day of tremendous din. It's a great Yom HaDin. It's a serious Yom HaDin. It's a day of judgment. Asheboy oivrin kol boy oilam l'takodi baruch hu kibnei meroyim. It's like lambs, right? It's like the sheep going by. Each one single file. We go by in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's a day of judgment, like on Rosh Hashanah. The donen oisom b'shamayim. I'll call Asidon Beruchnis on your whole future in Ruchnis. In Yaslichu B'Torah, Vavoide. Whether you're going to have Atzoch, you're going to have success in Torah and Avodas Hashem. The Meshach, look what he calls it, Hashona HaKadosha. It's a new year. It's a new spiritual year. Because Rosh Hashanah is a new physical year. Shavuot is a new spiritual year. The Kama Tzlocha, it's determined on Shavuot how much Tzlocha Yehi Lohem B'chol Dover V'Dover. And Hakol, all of this done in B'Shamayim B'Yem Hazeh. K'moy B'Rosh Hashanah. What's the difference? El Shavuot Hashanah done in Al Inyone Gashmias, on materialistic things, you're judged. Or B'Shavuot Al Inyone Ruchnias. V'Yeduah Ma'arav HaKodesh. Rebarach Menejibish. Rebarach Menejibish was, of course, the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. Rebarach of the town of Menejibish said, Ki hu misyare mishvuiz od yaisem ed Rosh Hashanah. You know, I'm more worried, he says, on Shavuot more than Rosh Hashanah. You know why? Ki Rosh Hashanah, he says, they judge me on Gashmias. So I'll have a little more materialistic, I'll have less materialistic. But Shavuot is my whole spiritual being. Shavuot is judging me how much Ruchnias I'm going to have. That's what I'm really worried about, he says. Kibbutz Yishon Adon and Yisodom Yimat Yisod Gashmiyus and Yad Porchois. A little more, a little less, but it's Gashmiyus. Talk about materialistic gain. Abu Bishvuas, he says, Don and Al Kola Ruchni Yishol Kola Shona. A person being judged on all of his Ruchnis for the entire year. The Zeu Mishpat Habe Yisod Kosha, the Geroli. That is much more serious judgment. The much more serious, fearful judgment than Rosh Hashanah. Kizek Koyveya, because Shvuas is Koyveya establishes. As called Asido Shel Olam, it will establish his entire future. Let's turn the sheet over, Rabbi Yisai. Let's turn it off to number four. Turn it over. You'll see the same quote. You'll see the same quote from another sefer called the Ome Moye. You'll see another quote. By the way, Ome Moye used to be in the Hebrew Hamadiyah. Somebody used to write every week. Very good writer, Moshe Rice. And all of his essays were compiled into a sefer called Ome Moye. So he writes, he says, Mishmoy shall Rava Kodesh Reborach Menejibish that sound Nimsa, what we just said. Sha'oma ki Misyore hu Mahadin shall Chag HaShavuot, Yoyse Mishu Misyore, he's more afraid. Shavuot than the din of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, he said, Ikra Mishpet hu Al Gashmir. It's a materialistic benefit. Well, on the Shavuot, that would din Al Ruchnir, in Kain hu Inyan Mashmo Usi Harde Yoyse, has much more meaning and much more serious. So take a look now, number five on the left. Also from the Sefer Pami Moed. And he says, Ke'ein Dvar Nelu, similar to what Rebaruch of Nejibish said, Nichtev Gam B'Sefer HaKodesh Moranayim. And he's Sefer Moranayim from Reb Nochem Chernobler. And he says in Parshas Miketz, so the Moranayim writes, V'Shvuyes Uzman Kabbalah Satoire, V'Olechet Bo Kol HaShom O'Lavet Is HaKodesh Baruch Hu. In other words, Shvuyes determines the acceptance of Torah for the entire year. V'chein mekabel kol echod et haTorah. Every person receives his own personal Torah. What does it mean? How much seichel, how much mind you're going to have to understand Torah. D'haynu be'ezeh seichel yavoid et HaKadosh Baruch Hu bo'ezeh Shonah. That becomes the term of the Shavuot. To realize that Shavuot is not a simple situation. Shavuot is a tremendous opportunity that we have to really commit ourselves to be able to take out the maximum that we are able to take out. It's a time where there is spiritual abundance. We have to be able to take it and collect it, because that is like put away in a bank for the whole year. And kiyotze b'kach, and similarly, kosev gam kedushas Levi. Also, the Sefer Kedushas Levi says the same thing. Shechag Shavuos is called Zman Matan Torahseinu. Now, usually we say it's the time that the Torah was given. How we usually translate it? It's the time that the Torah was given in the past, right? It's the Zman. It's the time of Matan Torahseinu that the Torah was given in the past. Says the Kedushas Levi, no, loyrak al shem shibu ovar horochay. It's not just because of the past. Hakadosh Baruch Hu hamik boi Torah lam Yisrael b'kedushosoy. Shavuot is not an event of the past. Then the past, the Kedush Baruch Hu gave us the Torah. Ela mishum shibu hoive. Now in the present, the choshono zehu hamoyed is the time that Torah is given. So Torah is given year after year, freshly, as if it's the very first time. Every year when Shavuot comes, this is the year of Kabbalah Satayra. This is the year that the Torah comes. And therefore, it is a tremendous, tremendous opportunity. We should not let it go to waste to be able to take the maximum. You have to prepare a lot of spiritual shopping bags, you know, to be able to put in all the spiritual gains that one is able to take out. Let me just conclude with a maaseh that Rav Aaron Kotler used to repeat many, many times. One of the greatest goyim, who was the Rav in Pressburg before the Chassam Sofer, was a goyim by the name of Rav Meshulam Igre. Shulam Igre was a tremendous genius. As a matter of fact, to the point that a lot of his writings are not understood. Now, On the surface, when you look into his writings, you say to yourself, I don't understand what he's writing about, and you say there must be some mistake in his calculations. The Chasam Sofer used to say, because he was such a genius, that the matter of fact that when we start reading what he's writing, we can't understand it because we are not able to go to the depth of the ideas being presented by Rav Meshulam Igaret. The story, as is told by Rav Aharon, is that there were two business people who had a din Torah. They had litigation, one with the other. So they came, a monetary situation, so they came to Rav Meshulam Igaret that he should adjudicate the case, he should pass on the din Torah. And it happened to be a very difficult situation. And Rav Meshulam Igaret says that he needs a few days. He needs a few days to consider who's right. That is, you owe him money, he owes you the money, who is right? And by the way, when it comes to din Torah, the amount of money doesn't make a difference. It's just as serious if it's $1. Because if the dollar doesn't belong to you, it's just as osur min haTorah, whether it's $1,000 or $2 million. Didn't prove like you didn't know it. A dollar is like $100. Doesn't make a difference. And therefore, you have to really know and be very certain who's going to owe whom the money, who has to pay to whom, or should not pay, and so on and so forth. So he said he needs a few days. Meantime, they were from a different town, these people, so they figured we can't spend these few days here. We are busy people. So they figured they're going to go back to where they came from. They're going to go back home. And they're going to ask their own rabbi, ask their own rov, let him pass in the Shiloh. So they asked him the Shiloh. This rov, by the way, Stomer was a Talmud Chacham, but no way did he match. No way did he match the greatness of Meshulam Igaret. There's no competition even, nothing. And yet, he says to them, you know what? Give me 20 minutes. That's all he says he wants. And he goes into his room, into his study. He comes back after 20 minutes, and he gives the answer. He says, I believe you and you, you said this and you said this. You know what? You're right, you're wrong. And therefore, this and this has to happen. This is what you have to do to right the wrong, and so on and so forth. And they were very, very impressed, he said. This great genius, the great Goyen of Meshulam Igaret, he says, the God Lador, and he didn't have an answer. He said he needs a few days, the Paschim is in Torah. And here this Rav, in 20 minutes, you know, he came to an answer. Anyway, many weeks later, they happened to come back to the same town where Meshulam Igaret was, and they decided out of curiosity to hear what his answer would have been. What his answer would have been. By now, he probably had the answer already. So they come in to visit him, and he said, regarding the litigation that we had, he said, many weeks ago, he said, what was the conclusion? And Rav Meshulam Igaret gives the answer, and it happens to be the exact answer that their own Rav gave in 20 minutes. And Rav Meshulam Igaret said the exact same thing. So they couldn't contain themselves, and they said to Rav Meshulam Igaret, they said, Rebbe, they said, you know, being that you said you need a few days, we went back, and we asked the wrong rabbi. And you know what? In 20 minutes, he gave us the answer. She said, can't imagine that someone could figure this out in 20 minutes. If so, he must be one of the greatest in the generation. Either he comes to visit me, or I go to see him. You know what? I have to go to see him. He's a great man. Tremendous wisdom. He can figure out in 20 minutes. That took me a few days. And he goes and visits the Rav. And he says to the Rav, he says, tell me the truth. There has to be some secret over here, he says. How did you figure out this answer in 20 minutes? It can't be by simple calculation and by simple intelligence. And the Rav says, I'll tell you the truth. He says, I went to the room, and I didn't want to be embarrassed by my balabatim, you know, who was standing asking me a question. He said, what I did was, I took out a tehillim, and I started being mispalo, started to cry to the Rebbein Shalom, please don't allow me to become embarrassed. Send me the answer, Min HaShemayim. And after I said my tehillim for about 20 minutes or so, I went into the Torah Mishnah, took out a sefer, and lo and behold, I opened it up right there, and I found the answer right there in the sefer. The Meshulam Igaret, this is Rabbi Aaron, used to repeat the story Meshulam says. The cry to Hashem to give me the answer, I can too. The chokhmah of learning Torah is to figure out using your own seichel. Hashem gave us seichel, and He wants us to work it out. It should not be given as a gift. We are here to toil in Torah. We are here to immerse ourselves on Torah. To get the answer with a gift, he said, I could have also done that. That's not what I did, he says. I worked at it. I tried to figure out. Hashem gave me intelligence, Hashem gave me seichel, but we have to apply our seichel to Torah, and then to arrive at the conclusion with our own yegiah, with our all our melech b'Torah, that is the ultimate way of learning Torah. That, Rabbi said, that is the koyach haTorah. Let's remember that Shavuos is coming up. Tremendous opportunities for spiritual gains. Yerot Zayin, we should have a tremendous chapter to Shema to be able to arrive and be able to collect as much Torah and enough hashpoch Torah to last us for the entire year. Shalom.